Hello and welcome to this week's Inside Education. The programme's website is insideed.com, where you can listen to or download podcasts of all previous Inside Education programmes. I'm Sean Delaney and you can follow the programme on Twitter with the handle at InsideEd. The Computers and Education Society of Ireland, or CESI for short, held its 43rd annual conference in Dublin in February last. This week, I'm pleased to bring you another interview that I recorded at the conference. It's with Dr. Conor Galvin from University College Dublin, UCD. Conor Galvin lectures and researches in education at the university, and he is responsible for courses and programmes in technology, in education, public policy and research methods. He has a wide range of interests in education, including social capital, professional knowledge, development policy in the Global South, and the impact of new and emerging technology on learning and society. He received the President's Award for teaching at UCD, and he has been a mentor for the Youth Media Team, a group of teenagers who attend and report on various educational conferences around Ireland. When I met up with Conor at CESI 2016, I first asked him to tell me what his presentation at the conference would be about.
It's one of those things that we've been thinking about for a while, but have only just got our act together on this year. As you probably know, I've been running a group called the Youth Media Team for about 3 years now with Pam O'Brien and Bernie Goldback out of what used to be Thurles, but is now Limerick IT. And we have this group of really superb young people who have acted as a media team, effectively, at a number of conferences up and down the country. Now, it often occurred to us that it would be quite interesting to put this group of people, young people, into the same space as a group of teachers, just to see what kind of happens. So that's what we're going to do at the workshop. We're literally going to give the youth media team the opportunity to run a workshop, to explain and to work through the process. So starting from how they would approach a task, how they'd plan their workload, how they'd actually get through it, and how they'd produce the product that they get at the end. And it's not just a case of talking about it, they're actually going to walk the groups through it. So we kind of have a slight ambush in a sense. We'll invite people to what they think is a kind of a fairly standard seminar, and they'll end up doing a little bit of walking the walk. So that's the plan, and I'm quite hopeful it'll work out.
The youth media team, and I spoke to Bernie before about it, it seems to be a group of people who's constantly evolving in terms of its membership. Yeah. So how do they develop the expertise that will enable them to teach the teachers about how they work?
We have a very simple rule, in the sense that we keep it fairly straightforward and fairly linear in terms of the process that's involved. Now, it's not linear in a very simplistic sense. It's linear in the sense that they have a number of tasks that they know they have to get through. The intention is that they will lead the groups of teachers through those. So we use a number of very simple and very straightforward technologies. We use a WordPress blog, and into that we feed our various kind of streams of media. The obvious one is an Audioboom. They do a lot of audio recording. We record that through the Audioboom app and then upload it directly to the blog. They also take a number of pictures or photographs as part of the process that they actually go through, and that takes them into that space. So to build up the expertise in those areas is fairly straightforward, because the apps are simple enough to use. The pictures are usually taken on their own iPads or using their own personal devices, cameras or whatever. We also have a backup real inverted commas camera, which we use to get some pictures also. And we have a sound recorder, not dissimilar to your own, to do interviews when we have what Bernie likes to refer as, you know, top rank people. But when we kind of corner ministers and people like that, we don't just use the Audioboom app, we also use a backup in terms of a very straightforward mobile sound studio. So that all then is fed into the stream. And the other part of it then is just very straightforward, in the sense that what they do is they have done a little bit of research initially on the person they're going to do the interview with. That's then built into a simple blog post. So what we end up with then is a blog post, a number of pictures inset into that, and the audio stream from whatever interview they do. After that, the final kind of touches are to add one or two comments from the interview as a sort of a teaser as part of the blog post. You know, so, you know, youth media team today spoke to such and such a person. She made some really interesting comments about X and Y, and then here's our lead-in from that. And it works pretty well. So the process is very straightforward.
It's very much multimedia. Is there any plan to introduce video at any stage?
Well, we do use video as well. I should have perhaps have said that. We've used a number of video infills at various times as well. And we've started to play with things like Sway, where we can actually have more visual representations of the work that's done also. The trick is, in our view, is to get the basic line through initially and then build out from that. So from time to time, there are a couple of the kids from the team that come in and they're really, really good on videos. So for example, Finn, who's with us today, is a real video head. And we will sometimes then use that as part of the interview process or to kind of do a vox pop and capture the feel of the thing. You know, so we do this kind of little run-through video, 3, 4, 5 minutes to get the sense of a conference or whatever, and very often it's one of the team that leads on that.
You're someone, Conor, who's been involved with SESI and with technology and education for quite a long time now. What, at the moment, excites you about developments in technology and education?
There's the right answer and there's the full answer on this one. My reaction to the direction things are going in terms of policy and stuff like that is a little bit, perhaps, lukewarm. I think that we're seeing an awful lot of backfilling and space making in the policy space. So there's not an awful lot happening on the policy side. And I hate to say that, but that's the reality of it. What does tend to actually happen is good stuff down at the level of the schools and at the various courses and institutions that are actually, you know, involved in getting young teachers particularly to use technologies. So I suppose the two things I would point to that I really, really like that are going on at the moment would be the emergence of the teach meets. Now, we used to call them SESI meets, as they say, back in the day, but they've now become much more broadly focused. So the emergence of the teach meet movement with a strong technical component, like the one we had last night, the meeting we had last night in the hotel down the way, that excites me a lot because it gives teachers the opportunity to talk to each other and to see what's, you know, what other people are doing, and it exposes them to kind of fresh thinking. So those sorts of semi-formal or informal gatherings where groups of teachers come together to share practice, I think are absolutely fantastic. The other thing that I've noticed recently is the teaching centres have started to step back into the space in a major way in terms of providing...
The education centres,
in the sense of providing access to kinds of courses and programmes that are to do with coding, that are to do with those sorts of computational thinking kind of spaces. And I like that. So that would be the second thing I'd say is quite interesting. Trinity are doing absolutely wonderful stuff. The follow-through in terms of what used to be Bridge 21, what's now the Bridge programme, and the way that they're integrating technology into day-to-day uses, I think is quite incredible. We're seeing something related to that also in the emergence of short courses to do with information technology usages, knowledge information, society work and so on within the short course for the junior cycle. I think there's great potential there. So all of those things excite me. But at the heart of all of them, it's a teacher movement. It's what the teachers are actually doing that really makes the difference. Rather than, it's almost, there's, you know, we're back to the 80s where we're succeeding despite policy rather than because of policy.
And were you disappointed then, for example, by the digital strategy?
I won't say disappointed because that's too judgmental a term. I didn't find an awful lot in there that surprised me. That was the first thing. It looked like a drawing together, and it was done well in the sense of it brought a lot of material together to the table, but it was a drawing together rather than, you know, a scoping out of future directions. So it was good, and it's great to have it, but again, it felt a little bit tokenistic. And I mean, some of the comments that were out on the SESI blogs and SESI conversation streams and everything afterwards, they caught the feel of it. Teachers were a little bit underwhelmed. And I felt much the same. So very good work, but very controlled and very aspirational. We are going to do that. We are going, you know, we should be doing this for the last 20 years, not talking about thinking about doing it.
And if you were advisor to a minister who was bringing out a digital strategy and you could put your wish list into it, what would be there?
Yes, it's not always the kind of the dream. I think I would do a number of things. I would find a way of making space and time available to teachers so that in a number of cases it might mean even stepping out of the classroom for 6 weeks, a month, 2 months or whatever. I'd build up a body of expertise and enthusiasm around this whole area of information technologies and the knowledge society, the connections between the two, but much, much more importantly, what they can do in terms of lifting educational values and opening up opportunities for young people. So that's one thing I do. I'd find a way of having some kind of sabbatical arrangement where teachers could step away from the day job for a while, look into this. I'd fund, and of course I would say this being a higher education, I would fund more opportunities for people to do short courses, you know, 1 year courses, master's level type work, because most of the really good stuff that I see comes out of master's related work where a teacher or a group of teachers, and I've seen this in my DLD, digital learning design courses, I've seen it in my new learning technologies in the teacher courses, where a group of teachers working together can come up with really powerful activities and applications to try out and use in their own classrooms. That's the kind of thing I think that we really need to be looking at. We need to finally kind of solve the bugbear of technical support as well. That's been hanging around for generations. My broad kind of feeling in that is that we need a national system, but it needs to be much, much more localised in the way it's provided. And that is a government responsibility, and it shouldn't be, sure. And I think an awful lot of governments have walked away from it and left schools to pick up the pieces and everything down the years, and I think that's profoundly wrong. So that would be a step in the right direction in terms of sorting that out. And then the final thing about, you know, do we or don't we in terms of providing kit to the schools? I think a decision needs to be made one way or the other of that. BYOD is... everyone, you know, is what everyone talks about. BYOD, bring your own device. It means the parents pay. And there are still in this country, and it's shameful, but there are still in this country an awful lot of situations where that won't fly. And I think, you know, we need to engage with that very seriously. And I'd have some ideas, but, you know, probably not enough. And there are lots of people out there that would have better ideas. And part of what we would need to do is get a forum together to kind of, you know, generate headspace around that. The kind of thing that Excited is doing as well, I find that really interesting, that as a movement...
Who are Excited?
Well, it started... I wouldn't be an official spokesperson for Excited, but it did start as an initiative of a minister in a previous government. It was Kieran Cannon who came up with the original idea, and he got around him a group of people that are very interested in that kind of... The space that teachers can work in and can benefit from. So that, I think, is a movement that could be supported. And I don't think it's a political thing. I think it's an educational thing. And that's really, you know, following up and on supporting those sorts of things, I think, was something any minister could usefully do.
If you were to look at the use of technology in education over the last, say, two decades, mm-hmm. what developments or what direction do you see it going in?
From this point out,
where has it come from? Where is it now? And then maybe look forward as well.
Right. Well, what impresses me is not what impresses most people in terms of technology. In the traditional Irish answer, if I was going from somewhere, I wouldn't start from here. We've wasted an awful lot of opportunities down the years. We've put an awful lot of money into the wrong places. And I mean investing very, very heavily in signature technologies that were never going to survive. The massive amount of money that was put into laboratories and stuff like that in primary schools, it never did make an awful lot of sense in a sensible reading. But it didn't stop people pushing it on, because that's what, quote unquote, politicians wanted, that's what parents wanted. So I think that the future really is to do with mobile uses. It's to do with more the kind of stuff that the youth media team actually do. Small devices, either personal or supplied by the school, used for teaching and learning purposes rather than technology purposes for its own sake. So it's making invisible, it's burying the technology in the ordinary day-to-day usage and day-to-day learning. There will always be places and spaces in a curriculum to do special work, for example, like the emergence of coding is one example of that. So there will be places for that kind of thing. But I would like to see it being more, technology being more part of the architecture. It's just there and you use it if it makes sense, you don't if it doesn't. Increasingly, we're seeing teachers finding sensible uses and good uses for technology. And again, I think that's a credit to teachers, and it's a credit to organisations like SESI that have encouraged that sort of mindset and have helped it and supported it. So that's the sort of usage I would like to see. The more integrated, you walk in the door, you continue using technology in the way that you really would, you know, perhaps outside the classroom, but it's only used in relation to the Learning Act, the Teaching Act, rather than as a distraction, which it sometimes is at the moment. So I'm very excited about things like, for example, Minecraft and the way that that's starting to show up on the edges of some education activities, not just because it's about Minecraft, but because of what you can do if you have a couple of kids working on projects together. And at the risk of sounding a bit trendy, I also like what's happening in relation to some of the, you know, the virtual world stuff. Now, James Norman and people like that have been saying this for several years, that there's a terrific learning potential in there. We're starting to see that
it's
coming
a second
together.
Life and so, some of those.
Even beyond that, you know, like in Minecraft, you can build worlds and you can work in worlds, you can go through worlds, you can learn in the worlds. So it doesn't have to be Second Life. It can be any platform that provides opportunities for virtual interaction. And the possibility of opening up classrooms as well to other voices and other experiences through things like e-twinning. I mean, I'm an absolute fanatic for e-twinning way back since it's 10 years on the go now. And it makes such a difference for any teacher to be able to reach out with her class or his class to another class or several other classes in different European countries to kind of sit into their day, to see what they're doing, to share their learning spaces. It's a fantastic opportunity. So I'm really a great believer in you know, supporting that kind of activity.
And how
as well.
Does that work in practice, the e-twinning?
Where do you start? There is a central site run out of Brussels called etwinning.net. That's a kind of a central hub that allows teachers all over Europe to connect with each other in a safe space. They call it the twin space, and it allows you to actually work with teachers and students from other schools in that carefully controlled space. But there are local organisations that run it also and that support it on each of the, what are called the NSSs, the National Support Service. Now in Ireland it's been Lergus that's done that, which in first glance might seem a little bit unusual, but they've done a terrific job down the year, in terms of supporting e-twinning. So what they do is they bring groups of teachers together, they provide them with enough information to understand what's going on in relation to e-twinning, and then they support them as they do their first and second or third projects. Then these teachers among themselves have come up with the idea of ambassadors. So there are teachers that have done maybe 6, 7, 8 e-twinning projects who make themselves available freely to other teachers who want to have a go in that space. And I think that sort of peer learning, that sort of learning where one teacher assists another, is very much the way forward. Now, in my own courses at UCD, I include always elements to do with e-twinning, partly because most teachers haven't heard about it, which is still a shock to me. But once you start them off, you know, the sky's the limit in terms of what they'll come up with in relation to e-twinning, because it's a pedagogical canvas. It allows you to do interesting stuff in interesting ways with different groups, different teachers, different students. And that, in my book, is always a good thing. There's always learning at the back of that.
You've also been an advocator for quite a while now of school-university partnerships. Yeah. What do you think schools can learn from universities, and what can universities learn from schools?
Okay, well, I'm glad you sort of said both ways, because I think it is a both ways thing in the first instance. We're very, very privileged in situations like the one that I'm in, where I have a certain amount of my day job that I can actually give over to thinking about and playing with technologies. So while I'm never at the cutting edge, and I'm put my hands up and I'd say that, I'm always kind of 3 or 4 steps behind what's going on in a lot of schools. I do actually manage to kind of act as a sort of a hub and bring ideas together. So when groups of teachers come into us in the university, or indeed when we go out to schools to work in those settings, you know, what you're saying is, well, here's some stuff that I find kind of interesting as an educator. It may or may not work for you. And the sort of things I've done down the years, I've used blogs in relation to the teaching of English, for example, and that's worked really, really well. More recently, I've done multimedia work in the same space in relation to the teaching and learning of English. And then when the teachers come to the universities, what you get, and we're very lucky in Ireland in the range of colleges and universities that are actually engaging with groups of teachers in this space. So, I mean, you can go to Mary Eye, you can go to Ulster, you can go to Queen's, you can go to Cork, you can go to any of them, and you'll find someone who's doing interesting stuff that they'll put in front of a group of teachers and say, what do you guys make of this? And those conversations lead, I think, to wonderful things. Down the years, universities have always supported cutting-edge projects as well in various ways. And I'm thinking of people like Deirdre Butler now, who's done fantastic work down the years in relation to Lego and Mindstorms and all of that space. And then we're in this position in the university where we can think a little bit, we can look at stuff, we can work with usages. And the best example of that, I suppose, to hand would be the Trinity usage in relation to Bridge 21 or, you know, 21st century learning, where the technology is pretty straightforward, fall off a lorry, simple. But the ideas in terms of what's used in the teaching and learning situation and how it can be used and how teachers are being assisted into those spaces is quite an interesting one. And that kind of raises one final sort of area that I think is intriguing and one that I watch with interest, not worry, with interest. And that's the emergence of people like Google and Microsoft as major players, not in relation to provision of kit and equipment, which is where we've seen these, you know, big players in the past. They're now starting to push into the teaching and learning spaces. And we're seeing Google, for example, supporting attendance at formal courses in Trinity. We're seeing Microsoft doing fantastic work in relation to through Stephen Howell particularly, in relation to Minecraft and so on. And it's all about teaching usages, learning usages. I welcome that, but I'm watching it. You know, that kind of, it's a good idea, but let's make sure it doesn't kind of lose the run of itself. Because I think at the end of the day, it's teachers and what teachers do and how they do it that you have to look at. And I mean, no more so than the kind of work that's done by people like, for example, Anne McMorrow out in Marino, where, you know, she catalyzes so much stuff. She starts so much stuff that goes on in the classrooms. And I think that's a tradition that we in the universities have always been able to kind of live up to, and I'd like to see that continuing. So that's perhaps the flow, and it is a bit both ways, because when you go to schools and when you meet teachers, you learn huge amounts of what they're actually doing. So a teacher comes into one of your sessions and says, look, I've been using this Surface Pro thing, I'm having some thoughts about it, what do you reckon? And you find yourself spending the next 2 days thinking about that. It's great, it's good.
How did you first get interested in technology and education?
Oh, technology and education. I had a Commodore 64 about 1.5 years ago. So I've always had an interest in technology as such. But in terms of bringing it into education, it was probably when I was working in Wales. We had a very strong tradition in the Welsh schools down in South Wales at that stage of using technology in schools. But we had a couple of people like Steve Kennywell, very few people in Ireland would know him, who were actually thinking about, well, that's all very well, but it's very techie. Now, how do we use it for teaching purposes? So I found myself involved in a number of what were called SIGs, special interest groups, through associations like the British Education Research Association and the Welsh Teachers Associations. And that sort of brought me into this space where I was sort of saying, well, you know, because at the time I was working as a lecturer in relation to the teaching and learning of English. So we used technology quite a lot on our course as a teaching and learning tool. And I couldn't figure why it wasn't transferring into the other areas. So this was how I kind of found myself wandering into it. When it came to Ireland then, it was a logical continuation. And I mean, I think one of the very, very first things I did when I came here was speak at a conference of the teacher centres as they were at the time, the education centres as they are now, where I was accosted afterwards by members of the newly formed NCTE in terms of how could I say this kind of thing without knowing what the realities were on the ground. So I had a long and very fruitful relationship with NCTE over the years subsequent to that.
Where the National Centre for Technology and Education,
where we worked in areas like the SIP projects, the Schools Innovation Projects, Schools Integration Projects, and that put me into that space where I met a huge number of teachers, and I was in a very privileged position to be able to kind of help, assist, advise and guide them. And I've been in that sandbox more or less ever since, you know.
And you sound as if you have a very balanced perspective on this. So do you see a downside at all of the increasing use of technology in education or even in society more generally?
Yeah, I do. And I mean, it involves the kind of the 3 a.m. syndrome. You know, we're always on, we're always connected, we're always expected, you know, to be on call. The dog can't eat your homework any longer. And I have some reservations about that because I think that there are some times and some spaces that are personal and private and that should not be, you know, open to the pervasive reach of technologies. That's a personal kind of thing as well. And I mean, I do exercise that in the sense that I do turn off my own technology from time to time. My kids don't, but that's another story. I think, you know, things like the dangers of the internet and so on, they're very real, but they're overplayed in a lot of regards too. most kids are far more sensible than we give them credit for in terms of looking after themselves. But I'm still very delighted to see things like WebWise and those initiatives and Safer Internet Week and all of that, because they have to learn somewhere how to protect themselves. And it's falling to schools an awful lot to do that work. It shouldn't. It should be a shared responsibility between schools and homes. But a lot of parents are still challenged by these issues and ideas. Not as many as would have been in the past, I know. But I do think that there's you know, that's a space that you watch all the time as well. I'm more worried about the well-being side of it than, you know, than anything else. And the idea that you are consistently on the clock and consistently in touch. I think you need those little silent spaces.
Do you even find in your classes in UCD that students find it hard to put away their mobile phones sometimes?
Yeah, but I mean, I have a very simple solution for that. And I'm almost kind of, you know, on the fascist scale, some people would say, in relation to it. What I do is, if there's something that we're doing that's particularly important, I would ask them to nominate one or two people, because they always want to someone who keeps the notes. Students are obsessed about notes. So I say, okay, who's going to do the notes? And I get two people, and they sit at the top with their laptops fired away. Everybody else turns off their technology. Because sometimes it's important to just talk and to look at each other across a table and to argue and to discuss. And then you can kind of go back to your notes and, you know, make summaries of what we've discussed and so on. So that's been part of my practice down the years as well. I have these kind of silent times where we don't use technology. But it is hard to enforce, in the sense that... But then yeah, I mean, I remember at one stage I had to throw a student out of a lecture for reading a newspaper. That was kind of a long time ago. So people will go their own way, and technology makes it a little bit easier. It puts it up to us as lecturers to, you know, to make sure that if we do have a big session, that it is more palatable in a lot of ways. I don't teach with that as the central plank of what I do, but I always do try to make allowances for the fact that people do need their little tech touches every so often.
And finally, Conor, what are your hopes for the future in terms of technology and education?
Invisible technology. I've mentioned it earlier, but this notion of invisible technology, the technology is there. When you need it, it works. There's a robust broadband available in every school to every student and teacher that needs to use it. And that's perhaps the, you know, that is still very, very elusive. And technology is just part of what teachers and learners use. It's not a kind of a silver bullet. It's not seen as the solution for stuff. It's seen as part of a good, rounded education that prepares you for a world and a life, not just work.
And that is the vision of UCD's Conor Galvin for the place of technology in education, bringing this week's Inside Education to a close. You can listen to podcasts of previous Inside Education programmes on insideed.com or on iTunes. You can email me with comments and suggestions to insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. Thanks to this week's guest, Conor Galvin. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.